Because I think a lot of people in our space, especially the audience of the EBFC show, is super interested in improving their health and hearing, you know, from someone like yourself, you look like you're in amazing shape, to describe like what are some of the things that you did to get to where you are now health-wise, and then how do you take that and use it in your coaching as well?
No, I appreciate the question and the recognition of it as well. So, and frankly, I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show, Felipe. It's an honor to be here. So I'm looking forward to our conversation today. With regards to the health journey, you know, it's funny, it was back in 2017 for me. Part of it was a health scare. Part of it was exactly what you said. If I'm going to coach, if I'm going to develop, if I'm going to encourage others to be more disciplined in their life, then I better start thinking about doing some of that on my own in my health and fitness journey as well. So I was really good on the lean side and work with organizations, but I didn't, and traveling all the time though, it became tough. There were things that go on, but often when I talk to folks in the leadership side, whether it's about business or whether it's about their health or their faith or finances, whatever it is that people ultimately will change when the pain of remaining where they are is greater than the pain of the change itself. I mean, changing from a nutrition standpoint, changing an organization, changing as a leader and growing yourself as a leader, they're all difficult paths that many people don't choose to go on. And so for me, again, that decision was kind of made for me with regards to that health scare. But ultimately, and one of the first things I had to decide was I needed help. I couldn't do it on my own. I could go and read books and things like that. But if I was truly going to transform the way I was living from a physical standpoint, I needed to go out and find a coach. And it was January 11th, 2017. I walked into this building that I had driven by for 10 years called 180 Fitness and found the first trainer that was in there. I said, I need help. Can you help me? And oddly enough, it just so happened that this trainer, and I don't really believe in coincidence, I believe all these stories from a faith standpoint, that was there, had lost her dad at 45 years old to a massive heart attack. And she recognized me. I was 47 years old. Yeah. And she said, I can help you. I can help you get through, but it's hard. You have to change the way you do things to make that happen. And, you know, just like in leadership, I had to set targets, I had to set goals and going forward. And in that journey, you know, again, what I teach folks early on, like the easy part is the improvement on the front end. And I started to lose some weight really quick. I lost 20 pounds within about 3 months, but I plateaued for a little while and I said, what's going on? So I had to take the next step of continuous improvement. I had to go through that cycle again to say, now I need to change nutrition. But the key here, and what I really teach other clients, the easy part, or really the hard part, is still rolling up the hill, is making the change and losing the weight or removing the waste from your organization. That is the systems and processes that you put in place that allow you to continue that journey. So what was it going to be for me in a lifestyle change that was going to allow me to do that? And I had a friend tell me one time, a mutual friend of Doug Doolin, a friend of his that we worked with on the innovation side, he says, just pick one thing to change. Just pick one thing small to change. And so my mantra in that first year of transformation became, it was the hashtag, it was stop eating French fries. And if it was one of those bad habits that I could change, okay, to make it part of my life, that I would be able to take the next step and go to that next discipline and put those changes in place. So the easy part, if you will, inside of coaching, whether you bring it into lean, whether you bring it in health transformation or whatever area you're trying to convert, is the actual movement and making the progress. The hard part is making that the way you do things on a daily, weekly, and monthly basis to make that happen. So for me, it's still having those disciplines in place, like tracking the food that I eat, like exercising 4 times a week and tracking the number of calories that I have to go. And one of the last things that's been really powerful for me is finding a group of folks that help to encourage me on that journey. So I've got a small group of 4 other guys. And whenever we do our workouts, we kind of do a hashtag of how many calories we burnt during that workout. So there's some accountability that comes into play. It's just another system that you have to put in place to make that go forward. And then ultimately finishing it out, it's reflecting on what's going well and what isn't, and other changes that have to be made. So there are all kind of changes on that journey that happen. I mean, I went through those changes, Felipe, you know, through my life, you know, lost weight and put weight back on, lost weight, put back on. And organizations go through that as well. And individual leaders go through that. But it was finally making the choice and then putting those systems and disciplines in place to hold it and hold those gains and continuously improve, which was important to me.
Yeah, I think you just gave me some keys personally, because I've had the same struggle. I've been up and down. I'm great at helping other people change. And I think the thing that I was missing that you just mentioned is that social component, like, and also getting a coach. I've even had a leadership coach in the past, and he's just like, why don't you just apply what you do with other people to yourself? And it's like, I don't know. It's like, why do all mechanics have a broken car in their garage? You know,
why right. Why do electricians have mess in their house? Right. In terms of what's going on, they have all electrical things to fix. Right.
Exactly. So I think that, that social component is really key. And, that reflection, I like that. I'm going to put a link to that Ben's Health article so that everyone can check out the 7 steps that John recommends and documents that journey for each of you. And you know, it's just around the corner. Depending on when you're watching this, you could still be in the New Year's resolution time. You know, don't let that be the thing that stops you from doing it. Just do it for yourself. Give yourself the gift. I really like that a lot, John. Thank you so much. Everybody stay tuned. You're in for a great episode. This is going to be one that is going to help you understand and navigate organizational change. And I think even more importantly, it all starts with the one, you.
Welcome to the EBFC Show, the easier, better for construction podcast. I'm your host, Felipe Engineer Manriquez. This show is all about the business of construction.
Today's show is also sponsored by the Lean Construction Institute. LCI is working to lead the building industry in transforming its practices and culture. Its vision is to create a healthy and thriving industry that delivers outstanding project outcomes every time, for everyone. Check the show notes for more information. Now, to the show.
Welcome to the show, John Gallagher. John, it is my pleasure to have you on the show. We have a mutual friend, Mr. Doug Doolin, that recommended and connected us, and I am so happy that he did. It's always great to have another podcaster on the show, but even better than that, someone with your credentials and experience. I feel like this is going to be a masterclass in lean and as well change and transformation, which is like your day in and day out, what you do all the time. So I want to get right into the show. There's going to be a link in the show notes below where people could get in touch with John. All of his preferred social media will be down there, as well as a little bit more about his podcast, his amazing blog. So ladies and gentlemen, please, while John starts to talk, feel free to go down and tap on that expanded description so you can get in touch with John. Follow his content and definitely do. I'm following and subscribe to the Uncommon Leader podcast myself, and I highly recommend that content. It is very good, and I'm using it to also PDCA this podcast episode. So thank you so much for that, John. But John, I want to open it up and kick it off right away. Can you tell me, so many people that listen to the show are involved in improving themselves, their organizations, their projects, and in construction. And I found that across many industries, got a lot of friends in manufacturing, we're facing the same kinds of challenges. And I want to take a unique look at this and focus on executive leadership. And I know that you've got a ton of experience at companies like Harvard, IBM. What can you tell us about when you work with an executive leadership or a leadership team that resists change initially? And then how do you use your method, the greatest story ever told, to factor in on how you help them navigate transformation and just, it's okay to change, or whatever you tell them, John. I can't wait to hear it.
I know, right? I mean, what is it that gets them to go, right? I mean, it's funny because by the time I get in through the door, the organization really has, I think, made the decision that they want to change. There's no doubt about it. Like if they're consulting with someone, much like we talked about, at the start with regards to a nutritionist or a trainer, they're recognizing that there's a need for a change. And I understand when I talk to leadership teams right off the bat, because I've got this on my wall too. Everything rises and falls on leadership. We can't delegate that responsibility through the organization. So any leader who believes that they can embark on a transformational journey that requires a change in their behavior as well as a change in the organization, and they think they can delegate that change, it's just not going to work. So I try to do an assessment up front to really think, you know, are they truly willing to be ready to make that change? Because it is not easy. It's simple. The steps are easy. There's 7 steps to personal or organizational transformation as we go through it. A3 Thinking will tell us there. I mean, people teach 5-box, 9-box A3 Thinking. But ultimately, it's that leader making the choice that they are not where they want to be, and they're willing to close that gap, because I think that's an important assessment up front inside the organization. And that need can come up in a lot of different ways. It's inside of an organization that wants to grow, that identifies an opportunity to grow, or they may be not profitable, and so they're looking to eliminate waste in those changes. But what really is that driving force? What's that reason for action? For me, inside the greatest story ever told, I often refer to that as the so that in that space. You know, they have either an opportunity or they have a problem they need to solve and they must improve. But what's the why associated with that as an organization? If they can't connect it to the why, whether it's I want to prepare this organization so that it can be handed down to the next generation. You see that a lot inside of construction, family-owned businesses that are trying to prepare the next generation to get ready to run the business. Or whether it's simply as they want to create an environment for their, employees that they can thrive, that they can grow, and they want to develop others. That purpose in mind is very important for the organization. And if they've got some clarity, I mean, we have to work through that, but if they have some clarity on what that why is, then I think it's something that can be pretty powerful and they can start down that journey. When I use the greatest story ever told analogy, what I really talk about is someone's going to sit down someday and they're going to be asked, whether it's by an instructor or a podcast host or whatever it is, and say, tell me 5 people who have made a positive impact on your life. And if someone writes your name on that list, whether you know it or not, to me, that's the greatest story ever told. That means you're making a difference in somebody's life. That means you've done something to add value to someone else, and they recognize that difference. Oftentimes, and you mentioned the podcast, I ask that question right on the front end with people. Tell me a story from your childhood that still impacts you. And that's what you find out. You find out who in their life, whether it's a family member or a teacher or a coach, who's made an impact on them, both positive or negative, that have required them or really inspired them to change and go forward.
Yeah, I love that story. And I think, you know, a lot of people working in organizations, and I've got a lot of friends in this type of space that are change makers trying to bring change to the industry. And sometimes they feel like they're facing an uphill battle. And I think making that connection with the people that are quote unquote resisting, I think we often fail to connect the why. And sometimes you learn something like you can do A3s, I can do A3s. The way, you know, and we actually do them, right? Versus people that have read about it, have heard about it, have no idea like what it is to actually do it. They don't even know why would you do it. Like we know why we do it. And we've had this conversation inside of many change maker spaces and said, people have to have that experience. And you, if you're the person with the experience, like what kind of environment can you set to enable that leader to have the experience where they're like, okay, I should be reaching for an A3 to solve this type of problem versus, you know, resisting if A3 is the thing, right? It could be something else. Like you said, like,
right.
You know, if the company's not profitable. So that's another one that's really interesting, John, because in a lot of organizations, especially in construction, companies are not necessarily have to be profitable on paper with current accounting practices, but the executive still lives a great lifestyle, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, they've got 2 houses. You know, I know some construction executives with 5 houses and, from their perspective, everything's great. Like they're getting paid. They have super high salaries. They've got these crazy high bonuses, but the company is like not performing well. The attrition rate of the employees is very high, above average, you know, north of 25%, but they're getting paid. So in the system, like they don't understand. You know, and they're even higher. I even know one company that started hiring lawyers in every office. So like every office has lawyers because of decisions that they made in their system. They never step back and look at, well, we can keep extracting from the organization or we can start doing value creation. That's a totally different mindset. And it's one of those times where sometimes you got to recognize like what kind of organization you're in. But I think if you can connect with people at the human level, like you're suggesting, answer that why. So change makers, listen to John. John's right. That's going to be my mantra. #listen to John.
We put that out there. Let's get that going.
Let's get that hashtag going. Hashtag listen to John. You know, connect with the why. You know, and I love that story about getting people to think way far into the future. That's another thing that you're doing that's enabling reflection that is not so normal. So I think those two things together, coupled together, is going to be very powerful medicine. So I want to, you know, stay on your experience train for a second. You're behind the scenes working one-on-one. What are some of the things that people in the great organization will never know, but you can anonymize for us and give us some insight, a little peek behind the curtain? What are some of the obstacles that they're facing, like why they can't change? And then what are you doing to help them overcome what they're telling you is the no, why we can't do it different?
Great question. If I had to prioritize what I hear and what I see, it really comes down to two things for me that I've identified with the organizations that I go in to work with. The first one is a focus or a lack of focus. You can do anything you want to. You just can't do everything you want to. And you get into some of these organizations, you know, especially the ones that, like you talked about, they're living the life that they want to live. And they're like, oh yeah, I can do all these things to make those things happen. And you are probably right. You can do all those things, but it doesn't mean you're going to do all those things really well. And so I think trying to get them to really focus on the main thing and making the main thing, whether it's in the initiatives inside of their organization or frankly, again, in their daily work and what they're focused on. And then you bring it into the leadership and you think about what those things are going on. The second biggest thing that I see in the daily, weekly, and monthly implementation of those changes that they need to make, it's distractions. I find leaders who absolutely believe that multitasking, working on many things is possible. And it's been proven in science that it just isn't. Okay, that multitasking is a myth and that they've got to eliminate some of the distractions, some of the noise that's happening around them. For example, just using one as an example, many leaders will say that they have an open door policy. And if you have an open door policy, then you don't have a very good policy if it's open all the time. Because how many times do you run into a situation, do leaders run into a situation where somebody knocks on the door and say, you got a minute, and you're working on an important task that you know is part of your daily ritual? You say, I'll give them a minute because I have an open door policy. And 30 minutes later, you're still talking to that person about sports. And then you try to get back into the focus. So organizations that try to do too many things will not succeed long-term sustainably. Leaders that try to have those, be everything to everyone will have trouble in succeeding long-term as well, because they'll allow those distractions to keep them from succeeding. So those are the two biggest things that I see right now, Felipe, that organizations and individual leaders run into.
John, that's incredible that you're seeing that, you know, behind the scenes with executive teams. Organizationally, I work with Scrum Inc. and I'm a Scrum trainer as well, and I love Scrum so much. And everything you said, number one, like, we're becoming very good friends. You don't even know it. It's like happening.
Your language.
One of the things that as Jeff and his team has worked with companies large and small across the planet, an inability to prioritize or focus in just plain English is exactly what you're saying. Number one problem at companies, large and small. And then, like you said, I've never heard that phrase. That's such a good way to think about a bad open door policy. It's got to have limits. And as you were telling that, I was like flashing back. I remember one CEO of a large construction company had an open door policy, and people would come into his office, and most of the time they would just, you know, jabber jaw. They would complain. I was making copies one time for a lawsuit we were involved in. So I had to do all this time at the copy machine. So I was like chained to it, because this is before I could automate stuff, and it was a lot of paper files. So I'm there, and this a department leader comes into the office, and they're just complaining for like 40 minutes. And I'm still there because I'm just making these copies. And at the end of the 40 minutes, you know, the CEO made some comments and gave them some insights. But I could tell the person walking out of there was not different at all. Like, they were still going to be complaining. And then it started being a pattern, like, all the time. And I started realizing, like, man, this is probably not that good. Like, all the time that was just spent on that was not spent on looking out for the business, was not spent on putting out fires for other things that are really, you know, happening. It's like, yeah, like, why am I involved in this lawsuit right now too? Like, right, my level at that time, I was just like an assistant manager. So it's like, that's where really the help could be, because we're not putting first things first. And then you said that lack of focus. I've heard from people and organizations, John, talk about change fatigue. And then when you look into it, as I've looked into it, I start to realize that a lot of executive groups are just every year, like when they go through their planning cycles, they want to rebrand, rename, change things. So from their perspective, they're like, we're doing the good work of like improving. But from the employee's perspective, they're like, what is the flavor of the month now?
That's right.
And it's not consistent. And I think that's like really tough for people to understand, because their intentions are really good, but the actions don't match. And again, I want to go back to what you said earlier. You know, if someone was going to write your name down of how you influence them, like for a company too, like I can remember, I study a lot of history, and sometimes you get lucky and you can pinpoint like this organization's trajectory changed when this individual was like stubbornly stuck on X, and that made the difference, and that will attract people to companies and keep people there, especially when there's a higher purpose involved in what you're doing. Cause nobody goes to work to help, you know, some numbers on a page go one percentage point higher. You know, since we're on this theme of like executives and executive resistance, and I hope the listeners are starting to get some hashtag just listen to John insights here. How do you tailor your coaching to address the unique resistance patterns you see? Cause you mentioned two main categories you see. So what do you do the way you show up with your clients to, so that you don't come in like, oh, I already know what's going to happen. Like, how do you keep it fresh for yourself?
I think I end up smiling with them as I go in, Felipe, because you know that you're going to see, like, they're going to believe, first of all, that they're unique and that their problems are different. And so, you know, while I don't want to put everything in the bucket of focus and distractions, it's going to cover about 80%, and they're going to think, well, my distractions are different. And so I allow some of that to go on with regards to tailoring, but ultimately, you know, I'm pretty intentional at getting these individuals to just start writing down what's important to them. And then I ask them to show me their calendar. It's very frustrating. So show me your calendar. If you say these are the things that are important to you, now show me your calendar and the crosswalk between what you're working on and the things that you say are important. And generally, for me, it's not me telling them they're doing the wrong things. It's for me to make them aware that they can see themselves like, oh, yeah, I'm not working on the wrong stuff. I'm not working on the right stuff right now, am I? And I said, no. I mean, so how do we move toward that? And so the prioritization process I use with them, you know, I often refer to as the 5 D's. You know, what are the things that they can deselect completely? Things that just don't need to be done if they're not important to the organization. What can they delegate that needs to happen? Frankly, what can they defer? It may not be as important right now. What is important right now as they move forward in the organization? And as they get through those, if they still have things they need to do, then they need to deconstruct it. This comes into the scrum. This comes into the lean of eliminating the waste inside of processes, because I don't want them to automate anything before they take the waste out of the processes. Those are the first 4 D's. Deselect, delegate, defer, deconstruct. And if all 4 of those things happen, then they got to do it. Ultimately, if they can't get into those 4, they got to do it. They got to get it in their calendar and see what's possible for them. Then they start to make things efficient to get those done. And if I can continue to ask those same 5 questions in terms of what they're able to do over and over again and get them to reflect, then they'll start to be able to free up that, John, I don't have the time to do all this lean stuff. Well, you've got to get rid of some of the other wasteful activities that you're working on to get there. So, of course, I have to understand, you know, personalities. I mean, if I work with an organization right now, it's got 3 family members that are, you know, at the top of the organization, all with different personalities, all with different approaches. So I used to have a colleague in Lean who would say, you got to know your chickens. And that sounds a little bit odd, but all of them have different personalities, but ultimately the output is going to be the same. It's going to be 1 egg a day. You just have to be able to work with them to help inspire and encourage them. And people are moved in different ways. So finding those different ways, for example, whether it's one individual who's very structured and very focused, then you create those wins for them. You create a visual win for them that allows them to feel like they're succeeding, where another leader might be very relational, very similar. You help them to create those wins from a relationship standpoint, but become, you know, very focused and very intentional on the tasks they have to do daily. So knowing your chickens is very important. I do an assessment on the front end to really understand, even again, leaders and organizations, where are they in life? Where are they with regards to their fitness and their health? Where are they with regards to their personal finances? And again, you've touched on already in terms of what goes on in construction. That tends to not get people to change, but legacy, making a difference in the space that they're in with the people that they work with, is generally what motivates folks inside of that space. They want to have their name written on that list. So they're all different.
Absolutely.
If I try to go in with a cookie cutter approach, it doesn't happen.
No, I like that advice too, that you smile along with them, and everyone does think it's got to be some kind of human psychological bias that we all think that we're having a super unique experience living. And I want to pick on all the executives, just so people know, I also know some executives that live paycheck to paycheck. So that's out there. Mm-hmm. That's called variation. And then as you get deeper into your lean journey, for all you listeners out there, you'll understand what kind of havoc variation plays, or how variation makes life so much more interesting.
Very interesting would be one of those words. And some folks thrive in that space, yeah. Right? That's the challenge of a lean leader. I want to be like that organization over there. Okay. But are you willing to do what they've done to do what they do as a lean organization? That's the key question for a leader. And you got to try and figure that out early on. If they're really willing to make the changes they need to make, what changes are you willing to make, Felipe, to bring that the fitness journey better? Because yeah, there are ways we have to change our mindset and our lifestyle to get there. The same thing in leaders and changing organizations.
Absolutely, John. Absolutely. I'm gonna hashtag no French fries starting right now. last week, I probably had 4 orders of French fries. I was on the road in Nashville. I never got Nashville hot chicken, but I did have like seasoned fries multiple times, and 4 times too many for sure. So I'm gonna,
double the good, half the bad. Just cut it in half next time. That's all. Go to 2 times. There's 2 times with broccoli, 2 times with French fries. I mean, it's a continuous improvement journey, Felipe. It's one that you have to be able to adjust to.
So. I like that. And see, just like that, ladies and gentlemen, John is now coaching me. It was that fast. It's so easy. I appreciate it, John. So now I want to, let's go a little bit deeper. So thinking about, all the executives you work with, John, can you remember a time where you can pinpoint a turning point where the executive was like, they had the aha moment, and then that became pivotal to accepting what the change was they needed to make? And what strategies would you give credit to for making that happen?
We hear all the time that building enclosure is the number one problem in construction. And when the task of the building enclosure is presented with so much pressure, it's something most of us would want to avoid. Until now, there has never been a course to teach someone how to manage a building enclosure. Building enclosure is a problem for every company, and the solution is often to ask someone within to try to find training or provide training to their teams to avoid these issues. Field Verified's enclosure management course is the answer to that problem. We learned the hard way, we've learned through failure, we've learned from others. This course, our team, will help those people who are assigned to manage the building enclosure be successful the first time so that they're spared some of the suffering and hardships that all of us went through. There's so much opportunity for a high return on investment, not just when an individual attends and all of the skills that they'll achieve, but when a team participates together, they can raise their level of performance by knowing what each other can do, what to expect, and they can raise the level of performance of that company as their careers excel and the company elevates along with them. The training is built on the science of how people learn. We capture all of the components that are necessary to master a skill. There's a hands-on component to the training where we're building a masonry mock-up, a metal panel mock-up, we're doing EIFS, and even installing a window that later you get to test. The hands-on training gives us the opportunity to translate the lines on paper to actual construction in the field. We always laugh because after the training, people come up and say, this isn't just about building enclosure. There's a lot of leadership in here. There are a lot of people skills. That's because those skills are necessary to be successful in building enclosure and in construction. We'd love to see you get started right away. We have lots of options available. They can come to us in person at Field Verified in Phoenix, or we can bring the entire operation to your facility and train up to 25 people at a time. And we've created an online training that's available for people who might not be able to attend in person. Go to the website and contact us. We're going to start by understanding what problems you're currently experiencing and develop a specific program that's right for the needs of your company.
Wow. So I like to refer to those as mic drop moments. And I'm a big fan of movies to use as examples in leadership. And the one that I talk about is Nanny McPhee. And it's one of those ones that says, you know, to a certain extent that when you need me but don't want me, I got to stay. I'm still going to hang around. When you want me but don't need me, then I'm going to go. It's time for me to go. And that's the transition moment that you're looking for. Yeah. When the, hey, John, I need you to come in, because I refer to myself with these folks as an enigma all the time. By the time I leave at the end of the week, or by the time our coaching session is done, you're probably going to hate me a little bit, but you're going to love to see me come back because you know you're learning, you know you're growing. I'll get to your question here in terms of an example. You know, there is one specific example of a leader who I had been working with probably for 6 years. And it's, you know, and it's in the value of what I refer, my word, leader standard work. So we talk about standard work and lean in terms of how we do processes, but the leader has to have standard work for their day and what that means. And that leader standard work can be visualized in many different ways. You can put it in your calendar, you can put it in a spreadsheet, hang it on a wall, put it on a flip chart, whatever you want to do. And I had tried many ways to work with this leader in healthcare. And it really was finally when we moved to literally painted her wall with dry erase marker, and she put her disciplines on the wall that she needed to do on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, and had to check those tasks off as she got those done in a daily basis, and said, now I understand the value of leader standard work. And it truly did, not the stuff on the wall, but the activities to focus on daily, weekly, monthly made a tremendous impact on her ability to get her tasks done during the day. But more importantly, it ended up helping her to spend more time at home. She was leaving on time when she wanted to, at least, again, double the good, half the bad, where she was staying at work too late almost every day during the week. She got to where 3 out of 5 days during the week, she was going on home on time, able to make dinner for her family and get that done and spend time with them. So it's a matter of being persistent and being diligent in trying different methodologies. You know, if I were to go in with only one approach as a consultant rather than a coach, and the only way to solve this is to do this in Excel spreadsheet, then there aren't going to be many people who transform. Back to that know your chickens methodology. You got to work with them in many different ways to find that light bulb moment for them to say, ah, I understand now. It makes sense. So when you can see that, that makes my work that I have, my why, more powerful, because they're going to remember that moment. Absolutely.
And I love that too. And for all the lean coaches out there listening to this episode, you heard John say there's more than one way, because I know some of you out there with your one single way, and you're just beating people up with it. So know your chickens.
That's right. Know your chickens. Absolutely. Hashtag know your chickens.
Hashtag know your chickens. Yeah, it's good hashtags coming.
There we go.
So I want to, you know, let's go a little, we'll stay on this leadership thinking here, this leadership thought train. I want to tie back into your experience, because you've got such a wealth of lean experience. It would be a crime if I didn't ask you some more lean questions, John, because you're just you're a warehouse of experience and information there. So I want to say, focusing on, you know, leadership development and lean methodology, you know, some people see those things as different. Some people see them as the same. You've been very intentional in your space, and I've done the deeper dive on your LinkedIn profile to see what kind of things you talk about. And definitely you're making a mark on leadership, and specifically with the Uncommon Leader podcast. But how do you see, from your perspective, how are these two things like intersecting? And then how is it enhancing what you're doing in coaching? And it's like, and what's your, I'd love to know like your why for, you know, you could go work anywhere, but you choose to coach. And so like, how is lean and coaching and why you coach all intersecting?
Wow. There's a lot there in that question. Let me try and unwrap that just a bit. So let's talk about that intersection of of lean and leadership. If I use my definition of lean, I refer to it as the passionate pursuit of the elimination of waste, that is lean. When I think about that from a leadership perspective, I do believe in the mantra, everything rises and falls on leadership. And that if we can't lead ourselves first, it's going to be difficult for us to lead organizations on a transformation journey that says, what's the passionate pursuit of elimination of waste? So in our daily operations, we have standard work for tasks that need to be done. As leaders, look, there, this bookshelf is full of books on leadership that identify tasks and disciplines that leaders must do to be a successful leader. And so if I put those two components together, why wouldn't I think that the personal development plan A3 thinking to develop myself as a leader is really the same as developing my organization or improving a process out on the shop floor, out in the field at a construction site, in a hospital or a clinic? Why wouldn't those two things overlap and utilize that same thinking? And that's sometimes the biggest light bulb moment for folks is when they realize that I can use A3 thinking to develop myself as well. Absolutely. I've got that reason for action. You identify where you want to be and where you are today, and you close those gaps, just like you do in any process where you go forward to making things happen. So it's a natural overlap to me in terms of that thinking. And frankly, maybe that's sometimes me in that I can't have too many things going on in my brain at the same time. And so I get stuck with this one methodology, like that is lean, that I've been learning for 25 years. And I was one of those blockheads before that said, get this guy out of here. It was 1998 when they brought a lean consultant into my building. I'm like, okay, let's get his week in and get him out of here. But I don't know what it was from a trigger standpoint, but when he was done that week teaching us, I'm like, I'm in. It just made sense. It was something that clicked during that process. And it was probably the system thinking. So I believe to be successful, you can make improvements, whether it's in your fitness journey, whether it's in your faith journey, or whether it's in your development as a leader, and that you've got to be able to maintain and continuously improve that journey. You've got to put the systems, processes, and disciplines in place to ensure that it doesn't backslide. I often use this picture as a wedge that keeps the ball from rolling back downhill again. It's those many ebbs and flows that we go through as leaders, because if we don't put it in as a lifestyle, as an organization, or as a leader, it becomes difficult to change. So I find it difficult to separate the two. Do I talk in every leadership activity that, the way I do this is through lean? No, but it's the way I do that is through systematic problem solving. And to me, that is lean. Too many times people, you think lean is an acronym. They use capital L, or all four capitalized to make it look like an acronym. Lean really is a strategy that allows us to grow as organizations, allows us to grow as leaders. And it's a way of thinking that allows us to be successful.
That's incredible. And I super appreciate that answer, John. And like you're saying, like there's not even an intersection. It's the same fabric, same cloth. And I totally agree, but I'm super biased, people. If you haven't figured out in this show, the Four Construction Podcast, like, and I've said why I even borrowed from Shingeo Shingo, who helped Taichi Ono develop the Toyota production system. Easier, better, faster, cheaper was one of the inspirations for the show. Everyone knows that I'm into lean. I dig it. And there's people out there all the time, and even friends of mine that are like, lean is dead. It's dying. And I tell people like that it's an idea and a philosophy and a mindset, and it doesn't ever die. It just sometimes changes names. And over the years, it does morph and the names change, and we'll probably live through changing the name because it's been out there now for a while. And we'll see what it.
Oh, each organization loves to give it their own name, right? I mean, I have clients that rename lean to something else that aligns with their organization. Absolutely. And you get another ism here from me, you get another hashtag, whatever it is. I'm like, look, I don't care what you call it. Call it pineapple. Okay. It doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is that you develop a new way of thinking. You develop a systematic process that allows you to understand when things are going wrong, that you can see it real time, and that you can make a change as a result of it. Like I said, call it whatever you want to. I don't get too hung up in the term.
I have been in a meeting with some of my friends at Bolt, and we've called things pineapple. So that is definitely a good strategy to make it work, and it kind of lightens the mood a little bit too. So
yeah,
I want to know, like, you know, you worked in some big names, like, again, you know, Harvard, IBM, and other large corporations, like, and, you know, sometimes it's like a faceless mass of just so many people. When you're working a space like that and the organization has charged you, like, John, we're bringing you in to do X, what strategies do you use to, like, serve what they want, but also help them to recognize that they might not yet understand the problem?
Well, and I was reflecting on this question that I saw coming in there. And for me, you probably won't be surprised to hear this answer, Felipe. But the first thing I do is take them to the Gemba, whether it's the executive leadership team. I say, let's go out and see that. When I went to my first construction client that I work with, they said, what do you want to see inside the building here? I said, I don't want to see a thing inside the building. I said, take me to the job site and show me what's happening at the job site. And I'll get you somebody else to take you over there and we'll show you around. I'm like, no. You go with me as a leader to the job site. So that's the start of the journey, because to a certain extent, you mentioned Ono. One of my least used but favorite techniques is the Ono circle, where I'll take a leader into a workplace and say, just stand here and don't do anything. And it's so hard for leaders to say, that's not how things are supposed to be working. That's not how things are supposed to go. I need to go fix that. Nope, just leave it alone and stand here. It's one of the most painful things that a leader can observe. But once they see what's happening in the workplace from a different perspective, they tend to realize a little bit more and say something to the effect of, I didn't know it was like that. I didn't know it was that bad. We need to change. And so that's the first step in the journey for me. It's not going to be about making a spreadsheet about their business. And it's about going to the workplace, going to the Gemba and seeing, you know, I ask the question, what flows? Take me through what flows. Because you mentioned, you know, some of the clients. I mean, Lean often gets pinned into, whether it's Lean Construction or Lean Manufacturing, into those spaces. But it works in healthcare, it works in real estate, it works in, came back from a concrete pouring facility the other day. You know, what flows? Well, the concrete flows, but, you know, ultimately what goes through the organization, it can be done in transactional environments. You know, we've done value streams, if you will, in the development of the human, from that point in which you identify someone to the point in which they leave the organization. What are all the steps in between? So when you take them to the workplace, when you take them and observe what's really happening, we know that our teachers in Lean would absolutely insist on that. And that's the starting point. They have to see. I mean, this sounds even strong. You got to rub their nose in a little bit, like you train others, right? And I don't mean that as totally degrading to executives, but they've got to see firsthand, because they don't really know from their offices what's really happening inside their organization. They think they know what's happening inside their organization. You know, what it also does is like, wow, I haven't seen you out here in a couple of years as a leader. It's good to see you out in the workplace. So it gives them a chance to be reintroduced, if you will, to the employees of the organization and to show them that it's important to them. So that's where I started.
That's fascinating, John. And I didn't think you were going to go there, but I'm so glad you did. And again, like, as you were talking, I started thinking back of some very high impact leaders from the past. And it seemed like it was much more common, leaders of some generations prior, to be more engaged with the face of work, where work's happening. And something happened, you know, we can blame the 1990s. It was just a crazy decade. Whatever happened in the 90s to create the leaders that we have now, they got a little bit detached. And I think maybe some of it's technology, good intentions of efficiency for them, but it's the repercussion has been sub-optimization for the organization. So it's like, that's why I love that you got that systems thinking. And systems thinking, sometimes everything isn't working at 100% to optimally let the system deliver. That's a good lesson for everybody. The Uncommon Leader podcast, again, you explore leadership from so many different perspectives. And I want to just tap your brain, Rolodex your mind. And John, you're old enough to know what a Rolodex is, like I am.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Felipe. Go
ahead. So people, look that up. If you don't know what a Rolodex is, you have to look that up on your own time. I'm not going to explain it. But of all the people you've interviewed, is there anyone surprised you, or you're just sitting back just thinking like, wow, how lucky am I that I get to listen to this person as you're asking your questions, like the way that I feel right now?
No, I appreciate that, Felipe. You know, So we're not quite at 100 episodes yet on the Uncommon Leader podcast, but I bring leaders on who not necessarily have gone through a lean journey necessarily, but they are leaders who have probably overcome, and their stories are what are really powerful with regards to equipping, encouraging, and inspiring other leaders to make change in their lives as well. And I think in the 90 plus episodes that I've done so far, there have only been two where I have been brought to tears. I've brought others to tears in terms of sharing some of their stories. So I always ask the same two questions. Give me a story from your childhood that still impacts who you are today as a person or as a leader. And then I finish up with, I'm going to give you a billboard. You can put any message you want on it. Tell me what you're going to put on that billboard and why. And in between, it's just a conversation about who they are as they've grown as a leader. And I've heard stories of individuals and people that I knew for years that have brought out, I'm like, I'm jaw dropping, you know, losing a loved one, stories of being terminated from jobs and how they've overcome that. Stories of when they were bullied as a child and how it impacts still who they are today in terms of their confidence level. And I got to tell you, it leaves, to your point, I feel honored to be able to just hear some of that stories and that they would share those stories with me on the podcast, not just with me, but with the listeners of the Uncommon Leader podcast. The stories themselves, I tend to, I want to be more aware and more present in those conversations at times. And that's been the reflection for me is that, A, I don't like to go back and listen to my own podcasts, listen to my own voice going through. So I don't always listen to them. So I'll have people tell me stories of what they heard on the podcast. I'm like, I don't even remember that person really saying that, but that is really cool that that impacted you. And I'm so happy. So, you know, if I'm going to grow on my podcast as well, is that I want to be able to be more present for those conversations that I listen to those individuals. But I got to tell you, the most powerful thing for me is hearing those stories on the front end. And you know, my methodology being referred to the greatest story ever told, that's what I'm searching for. I'm searching for stories of individuals who have impacted them so that they can recreate, so that there's that why again, that so that they can recreate that in their lives going forward so that 25 years from now, I don't know what the media will be, the next generation that goes forward, but how are they going to tell the story about someone who's made an impact on their life so that their name, you know, continues on?
I love that, John, and I super appreciate you bringing that forward. And I think, you know, a lot of people don't realize like how impactful it is. And even us as content creators, like we don't always realize like what we do is going to resonate with folks. I had a message come from a listener, a good friend of mine, and he was telling me that he'd watched one of the shows like 5 times. And I was thinking like, wow, that, and I was like, all the shows to watch that show 5 times. And, you know, but it's like, it hits people at the right moment and it has like an impact, and it'll impact people differently because of their experiences. So I want to do you a solid, John, and give you a billboard in honor of the Uncommon Leader podcast. If you had a billboard, you had one thing, and you can't tell me it's like where to contact everyone. You're already going to the show notes and you're following John's podcast because it's hashtag listen to John. But I want you to think about, for you, John, let's paint that billboard now for the audience as we close the show.
Well, again, as we close it out, I've appreciated the opportunity. I've loved the conversation. Frankly, I hope we get to do it again at some point in the future. And it's something that stuck with me, and you won't be surprised that it is a hashtag, but it's raise the average. And that's on the billboard. It gives people a chance to figure it out. So, I mean, everybody's kind of heard the quote, you are the average of the 5 people that you hang around with the most. So being very selective in terms of the circle of people that you have around you is very important. But more importantly to me, with regards to raise the average in my journey back to the greatest story ever told or others, is that when you walk into the room with an individual, are you raising the average of that group yourself as you go forward? What are you doing intentionally to develop yourself so that you can continue to inspire, encourage, and equip others on their journey? You know, if it's something for me in terms of a task to ask folks to do, it really is to understand why they do their work. For me, I want to make a difference with people who want to make a difference, doing something that makes a difference at a time that makes a difference. And right now we have a need for leaders in our homes, in our communities, in our workplaces, in our country. And if we're not raising the average of the room when we walk into it, then what are we doing to get better? So continue to grow. You know, if I had to give that advice to even young leaders, I was guilty of this coming out of college. I was done. I didn't read anymore. I'm like, I did all my reading there. I'm not done. And so I had a mentor give me a book, 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, which I would suggest to anyone that is listening to this podcast. And to me, that was the point that I said, it's time for me to start growing myself on my journey. I'm not done. And we're not done till we use it all up at the end of our lives. So if you're going to be in the room, you might as well raise the average in the room that you're in.
Very special thanks to my guest. I'm Felipe Engineer Manriquez. The EBFC show is created by Felipe and produced by a passion to build easier and better. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, everybody. Let's go build.